Welcome to Missing the Mouse. Missing the Mouse is a podcast about Disney parks and all things pertaining to the parks. This is episode 2. I'm Jeremy Pettigrew.
And I'm Brad Burleson.
All right, let's just jump right in. So Disney has an app for iPad called the My Disney Experience, and it recently got an update that made it quite a bit more functional. And Brad and I were looking at it, and it reminded me a lot of Pal Mickey. And for those that are unanointed, Pal Mickey was a little stuffed Mickey Mouse that had an infrared receiver in his nose, and he would, when you were at different points in the park, would tell you about certain things. He would tell you about wait times. He would do little trivia with you. He was just supposed to be your little buddy and keep you up to date on stuff. I have never actually had the opportunity to use a Pal Mickey, but Brad actually has one himself. And so, Brad, you want to fill in any holes that I left?
Yeah, I feel like you described him pretty well. You know, he was actually something that my mom got, and she got the very last version of the Pal Mickey, and that thing was her closest companion on our trips throughout the parks. So, you know, he would be sitting there and all of a sudden it'd be like, ha-ha, it's about time for the parade. Or, you know, there sure is a short wait over at, you know, insert attraction here. So, you know, it was a really cool little piece of technology. Didn't always give you as much information as what you would like, maybe. But I think overall he was very good for what he was when he was there. So, and, you know, as you said, the app, I don't know. The app is somewhat similar to Pal Mickey in the informational aspect. I don't know that it's there as far as the create a connection with the guest aspect as what the Pal Mickey had, you know?
Right. And the app doesn't push information at you like Pal Mickey did. But what I wanted to kind of talk about was the opportunity or the possibility of that kind of functionality with you know, just with Bluetooth Low Energy and with iBeacons, Apple's new location-based stuff, it would be really easy for an app on your phone to kind of push or show you a notification when you were near Splash Mountain or Space Mountain that said, you know, the wait time here is really super, you know, short. You might want to just go ahead and jump on Splash Mountain real quick.
Yeah, you know, and it's kind of interesting because you bring up the iBeacon, which is a very cool technology that Apple's working on, and I think has some is getting a little bit of traction. I don't know. We'll see long term how it plays out. But it's, you know, it's kind of interesting because if you look at like the history of this app, you know, the My Disney Experience app as it's currently labeled originally started off as Mobile Magic back in 2009 when it was a Verizon specific for, you remember the old flip phones? It was an app for those.
The what?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was originally like, I think, a $10 app, and it was good for 6 months. So it was not even a permanent purchase. You were going to pay for it every 6 months, which for most of us would mean you would have to pay for it every time you went to Disney because, you know, I guess if you're a Florida resident, it's a pretty good deal. But, you know, for us, once a year was all we could even kind of afford. You know, so Disney taking advantage of the money there. And then it went from that to being an Android app, which was, I think, finally ported to iOS in like February of 2012. And then suddenly Apple launches this whole new app it's only on iOS right now, in like August of 2012. So there was a very short period there. So it's kind of interesting to me that Disney has gone from using these feature phones as the lead device, which, you know, it was weird because back in 2009, the iPhone was out there, to Android as the lead device to now iOS. So it'll be interesting to see if they take advantage of some of these Apple centric and Apple specific even, features, you know, talking about iBeacon or something.
Yeah. I feel like the whole Verizon thing had a lot to do with Android because when the Droid came out, it was, you know, that was the first Android phone. It was only on Verizon. It was, you know, just Verizon really was the Android Android company, so that makes a lot of sense. But I'd love the direction that Disney's going with these technologies, and one thing that they enabled with this new update is actual wait times for rides, instead of just saying the wait time at Splash Mountain is short or long, actually having the information in the app that the wait at Splash Mountain is 40 minutes or 10 minutes.
Right, and not having that specifically, because, you know, the older versions of this app and, you know, or the previous app did have that information available. But for a while, it was only if you were a Verizon subscriber. And then it was only, even then, it was only if you were in the park, that actual park, you know, so it was all GPS locked. So if I'm at Epcot and I've got a park hopper, I can't look and see, you know, what are the wait times like at, you know, over at Disney Hollywood Studios? Would that be a good idea, or is it really crazy busy over there?
Right. And that just doesn't make any sense to me. The whole, you know, maybe GPS lock it if you're on the property. You know, put a geofence up around the Walt Disney World property, but not the park. Keeping that information from someone who is wondering, could I go over to Hollywood Studios to finish out, you know, my evening or not? I mean, that just seems silly.
Yeah, and, you know, and personally, I don't even like the idea of geofencing, so I like the new direction. Because I'm one of those weirdos who randomly will open up that app and be like, I wonder what the wait's like on Peter Pan, because I wonder how busy Magic Kingdom is on a day like today, you know? And so I'll pop open the app and I will tell myself how long the wait is. You know, I've even been known to go, I wonder if you can get a resi at Le Cellier. You know, can that be picked up this time of year? It seems like it's more beneficial to not fence those things in, because it actually makes that app something that I will look at. And admittedly, I am a niche audience that is definitely in the minority, but it's something that I will look at and keep me attached to Disney, even when I'm not anywhere near a park or even having plans to be at the park anytime soon.
Right. Yeah. And that's a big one.
Yeah, and I definitely think the iBeacon stuff, it could really introduce some really cool things. Again, I feel like the big difference there is the Pal Mickey, the personalization, the having a character. I think especially for kids, that would be a really cool thing. So, I mean, one thing that I'd like to see, and of course we can dream pie in the sky all we want, but I'd like to see Disney, you know, integrate some characters into this app. Because, I mean, imagine if, you know, your kids could actually interact with a three-dimensional Mickey, which, you know, Disney's got some of this technology available. I forget, remember that app that just recently came out or a little while back with all the Disney movies available in it?
Yeah, animated on the iPad.
There you go. And that had, like, you know, where you could even take a 3D character and do your own animation with that character. So, you know, the ability to integrate something like iBeacons and have those 3D characters there, you could actually kind of recreate that Pal Mickey experience to give the kids something to look at, and heck, even to give us something to look at.
Yeah, and they're even in the parks. I know that they've been testing an actual Mickey Mouse statue that will talk to guests. And we'll hear your name and speak your name back to you and have conversations with you. That seems like a pretty good, you know, step in that direction.
Yeah, and, you know, Disney has a history of doing these sorts of things, even before, you know, the technology was out there. You know, thinking of things like the talking trash can, or, you know, where you've actually got, you know, a trash can that's moving around talking to different guests, or Turtle Talk with Crush over at the Living Seas.
The Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor in Tomorrowland.
Exactly. So there are so many examples of this happening on a large scale, but I think the technology is finally getting there to where Disney could consider doing some of this stuff on a smaller scale. And I'd like to see them take the lead in some of this stuff, because they've got the imagination and the functionality to do it, you know?
Talking about all the technology at Disney, the Magic Bands are, you know, they're they're blowing up and they're getting pretty cool. I was a little suspect of them when they were first announced. Just talking about, you know, FastPass Plus and having everything on your wrist and your room key. And I'd heard stories of people in the beta program who, you know, you have to line up the little Mickey head on the reader, like just so, and it just really wasn't any faster. But just in the near past, I've heard a lot of cool stuff. And just last week, Disney announced that they're going to add PhotoPass functionality into the Magic Bands, where if you're on a ride that has a photo and you've linked your PhotoPass account to your Magic Band, when you pass through the photo area on that ride, your photo will automatically appear in your PhotoPass account.
So, right, and so basically Disney's now creating this less friction to getting you to part with your money, which they always seem to do very, very well.
Oh yeah, they're the greatest at making it easy to spend money. And that's another, you know, that's another real key factor of Magic Bands, is now you don't even have to remember your room key to, you know, charge your meal to your room or to charge souvenirs to your room. I mean, they're knocking it out of the park with friction-free spending. But I don't know. I think it's so cool, and it's so just so much more fun to have all the, you know, the photos that you get taken in front of Cinderella's castle, in front of the Fantasia hat at Disney Hollywood Studios, all those pictures, and then your ride photos as well are just automatically in that photo pass. So you get home from your vacation and literally every photo of you that was taken at that park, even on the rides, is there for you to purchase. And yes, they're expensive, but man, what a fun way to, if you were making a goofy face on Space Mountain or something, to just be able to buy that picture from home and not even have to worry about, you know, just completely bypassing the photo desk in the gift shop.
Right. And of course, you know, prior to this, they still, you know, they had the PhotoPass cards, where you would actually take your card. You would, the first time that you took a photo, they'd hand you a card. And then anytime you took a picture after that, you would hand that card to the PhotoPass photographer. They would scan it, and that would immediately attach everything to a single card. Of course, the issue there being, kind of like you said with the room keys, you know, and I've experienced this firsthand. You accidentally leave your PhotoPass card at the room or something, and so then you go out and you're like, okay, well, we just got to get another PhotoPass card. So you get home, and you've got three or four different cards, and you've got to attach everything back to one another. And as I recall, Disney's, you know, created some tools to do that, but clearly it's more work. You know, it's more work, it's more time for the PhotoPass photographers and everything. So, and I definitely think that this is going to be an advantage.
And it's less magical.
Yes, of course, because I mean, you know, what's going to be more magical than, you know, and I want to see how they're going to do this. Are they going to have the PhotoPass guys, you know, carrying around the little readers similar to what we've seen at the, you know, at the gates and the fast pass, and so you're just gonna tap your band up against his like side or something, or what's this going to look like? You know?
Yeah, I don't wanna be tapping my band.
Oh, that could come to mean something different.
Yeah,
So they should avoid that. Yeah. But but yeah, so I definitely think that Disney's doing some really cool things here. You know. What will be more interesting to me with the whole Magic Band, as a complete thing, is going to be how much information Disney's going to have access to that they're not going to be sharing with us. You know, you've seen, or at least I've seen information showing that Disney keeps very close track of the flow of the parks and how heavy different sections of the parks are on different days. And we're going to move this from them just being able to go, there's an awful lot of people over here, to being able to look at and profile, okay, you know, ages 25 to 30 males seem to really like these attractions at this time in this part of the park. Families with small children like this, you know, and on some level it's pretty freaky from a privacy perspective, But they're doing very well in adding a lot of value to things while trying to get all that extra information.
Right. And I'm curious, at least a little, on what harm could be done from them knowing that, you know, I am 24 years old and I spend a lot of time in Tomorrowland.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, it's very easy to jump all over this as, oh, this is a horrible thing. This is a horrible infringement of my rights. And this is something really cool that they can do a lot of really cool stuff with, you know, and I'm one of those people who I kind of bounce back and forth between, which side of this I'm feeling. But you know, again, it's a big advantage that they aren't just throwing this thing out there, giving us the exact same functionality we've always had. And then saying, oh, and by the way, you know, now we'll be able to track you even more closely, which, let's all be honest, they were able to track us pretty darn well with our, you know, Keys to the World card that preceded this anyway.
Yeah. There was no trouble in them seeing, you know, where you were eating and just the snack credit is genius. Because you buy a bottle of water, you know, in Germany, in the World Showcase in Epcot. And then get some popcorn in Future World, you know, and it's the same thing. They can basically track exactly where you've been just over time.
And you know that you're not just using your snack credits. You're using your dining credits, but then you're also anytime, or at least for me, anytime I was paying for anything, I mean, geez, I would leave my wallet in the room
and I would
just take that. Yeah, you just take that card with you because you attached your credit card to it and everything, and anything you wanted, you just slid the card and you were good to go.
Yep, and that's the key. I mean, when I went for my honeymoon in September of 2012, my credit card was associated with my room key in June. I mean, the guy was like, do you want, when I booked the thing, he said, do you want to just go ahead and attach this? And I was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, if they're gonna make it that simple, and let me just go ahead and tell you, having those things attached can be very dangerous at things like the Food and Wine Festival in Epcot, because it is way too easy to use that room key at every one of those little kiosks where they're serving those little sampler sizes of different wines and different foods from different countries, and then you finally get back to your room and you look at it and you're like, oh my goodness, how did I spend that much money? But again, it's lowering that friction in the purchasing process to where you just don't recognize that you're even spending that money. You know,
right.
they kind of create that disconnect.
It's not money.
That's right. It's just swiping a little card. It's swiping my room key. It's not even swiping my credit card. It's swiping my room key. So,
which is, yeah. And you know, I know how dangerous it is. I got the bill when we left, you know, when I went and picked up all of our stuff from our resort gift shop, because if you're in the park and you're staying on property, you can give them your room number and your resort information, and they'll just send your souvenirs back for you. So if you're if you're shopping at 9 a.m. and you buy, you know, a whole bunch of mugs or something breakable, you just say, hey, can you send these back to my room, please? And they will, you know, certainly do it without any problem. And then you've spent all this money with nothing to show for it. And it's even that just deepens that disconnect, but man, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
And that's the whole point is, you know, it's like you said with the magic bands, it makes it more magical. It makes it more magical to know that my stuff is just going to be at the gift shop. I don't have to worry about lugging around all the cool little things that I see. And so then I don't have to worry about trying to make sure I leave the park 30 minutes early so I have time to stop by all the gift shops on the way out to buy everything and then have to carry it with me in the bus, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, because that's what most people do.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, and the magic, so yeah, the magic bands are just kind of a natural addition to this, though. You know, I did a little bit more reading about the FastPass Plus, and I'm waiting to see FastPass Plus turn into the dining insanity that we currently have. You know, where what is it? I think 6 months out now that you can make reservations.
Yep, 180 days.
Yeah, and so I've now seen that apparently what FastPass Plus is going to be 60 days out, that you'll be able to make your FastPass reservations. You know, and of course that what that means is 179 days in, any of the big restaurants, you know, thinking Le Cellier, Cinderella's, Royal Table, those are not available, because as soon as they came open that day, 6 months out, they were all gone. I'm just wondering, are we going to see the same thing happen with fast passes, where it's going to be impossible to get that, I don't know, Toy Story Mania fast pass unless you get it at 60 days on the dot.
Yeah, which I feel like is kind of against what the whole point of FastPass Plus is, which is to let you wake up in the morning, log on to your phone, log on to the My Disney Experience app, and make your FastPass reservations for that day. But yeah, the dining insanity. I booked Le Cellier reservations 5.5 months out. I was there for a week, and the only reservation they had was Tuesday night at 9 p.m.
Exactly, and you were lucky to get the reservation that you got, because there are plenty of people, there are just no reservations available, and you check back again and again and again, which I think I've heard they're doing some stuff to try to alleviate that pain as well by, forcing people to pay a little bit of a penalty there.
Yes.
To keep, and I think it's actually necessary, because there are so many people now that the way that they handle things is, well, I'm just going to make a reservation for dinner in all four parks, and that way I don't have to figure out where I'm going to be, and that so that means there's going to be three no-shows,
right?
For one family, and it keeps other people from being able to get into a restaurant.
Yeah, and I believe it's $10 per person per reservation is the penalty. Yeah,
and we both know that Disney will be lenient about that, depending upon the circumstances. And I've seen this. We had a reservation for California Grill one night, which, if you make a last minute cancellation there, you do still have to pay a penalty. This was even a few years back, and we ended up getting an opportunity for a magical moment to actually go out on a fireworks cruise out on the lagoon. And we went and told them, we were like, hey, we've been given this opportunity, but, what can we do about this penalty? And they're like, oh, that's cool. Just go ahead. We'll take care of it. So I think there's still going to be, I think Disney's going to do that. But if they look at your account and say, you had four reservations for tonight, the only reason that you didn't make this reservation is because you went and ate somewhere else, then they're probably just going to say, you're going to have to pay.
Yeah. If you have a reservation in the Magic Kingdom at 7 and Epcot at 8 and, Hollywood Studios at 7:30, that doesn't look very good.
Oh, come on, man. I just wanted to eat my way around Walt Disney World. Which, let's be honest, with the amount of food they serve means that you were going to roll your way around Walt Disney World.
Right. And if any of the other restaurants work on Le Cellier time, your 7 o'clock reservation is going to be more like 8:30. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. They don't always quite figure out how long people are going to take to eat, so... I think they tend to overbook a little bit. And hopefully that, this could also cut down on that, because as much as we're aware that people make four reservations for one meal, Disney's so much more aware of that. And I wonder if that isn't part of that overbooking issue. Is they're like, let's book an extra 10 tables because we know 10 people aren't going to show.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that won't also cut down on that some, because more people will actually meet the reservations they're making, and then they can they'll cut down on the overbooking as well. I don't know that, but I kind of wonder about that. So, like I said, I think though that the Magic Bands are going to create a lot of cool opportunities there. Now one thing though that I was wondering is, what are they going to do about the ticket reselling with these things when all of a sudden, before with the paper tickets, I guess the big prevention was the scanner, which, scans your finger and does not take a fingerprint. And when I worked there, Disney was very quick to tell us, you need to say that we do not take people's fingerprints. We just simply take some bio measurements of the length of their finger and things like that. And that was kind of the prevention there. So what's going to be the prevention when the Magic Band is suddenly your entrance into the park? Are they going to keep the fingerprint scanners or what?
Well, I know that all of the parks at Walt Disney World are turnstile free now. And from what I understand, they are linking the Magic Band to your My Disney Experience account. And so that if you were to try and resell your ticket, which would be your Magic Band, you would also be giving whoever you were reselling to access to your entire account. And I think that's their way to stop reselling, is just saying that, hey, you know, you're going to have to give this person access to your entire account, and talk about a privacy concern.
Yeah. And then it's not a privacy concern about what Disney has access to. It's privacy concern about what whoever the random person who bought my, you know, 2 days left, what kind of person are they? What are they going to do with my stuff?
Right. And is my credit card still linked to that account?
Yeah. Did I get that off or not? And yeah, okay, so I can see how that would be, how that could be a little bit, could dissuade you quite a bit. So with the, so they have removed the turnstile. So they're going to go turnstile free.
Right.
Which, you know, Now I'm wondering, what are they going to do to stop the guest who just, like, tries to rush through the entry gates?
That I'm not so sure about.
You know, I guess I can see the appeal to doing that, because now it kind of gives it a more open feel and everything. But, yeah, that's what I always kind of assumed the turnstiles were there for, was to keep the guests from just running straight in.
Right. Yeah, I guess they're going to have to beef up security a little bit. And if they can't beef up security, you know, I guess we might see the return of the turnstiles soon.
Yes, or we'll see the, you know, some kind of new equipment where you'll basically get in and they'll just have you tap your Magic Band at the entrance to every ride. And if you came in and you didn't check in, well, then you just can't get on any ride, which would actually be very similar to the way they handled, you know, the extra magic hours for on-property versus off-property guests.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense. And on that note, I think that's going to end episode 2. Episodes of Missing the Mouse will be coming out every 2 weeks. And thank you for listening, and have a magical day.